right. Wild Card Wednesday. You're marrying Wild Card Wednesday. Yeah. Wild Card Wednesday is any song, any artist, anything. 312-981-7200. Kathy requested Rock Sugar with Don't Stop the Sandman. Rock Sugar does all mashups. That was Don't Stop Believing and Enter Sandman. I didn't hear a lot of Enter Sandman in there, except for there was one part of the riff. That was mostly Don't Stop Believing. I mean, the guitar sound sounded like Metallica, so I guess that's okay. Wild Card Wednesday, 312-981-7200 is the phone number. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're here till 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich at the opening bell at 5 and Steve Cochran at 6. Okay, we were just talking about words and language and all kinds of cool stuff. And I have here a really interesting thing, 25 words that don't mean what they used to. So these have different definitions than they are now. And a lot of words change or, you know, morph over the years, many, many, many years. And a lot of words become part of the lexicon and change as well. Like, I think I'm trying to pinpoint when Google, first of all, became a part. I mean, it's a company name, but it also became a part of the dictionary. And then it also turned into a vowel at some point. A vowel. It turned into a verb at some point. And instead of saying search for that on the internet, now people just say Google it. I'm trying to figure out when that happened. What would you say, Esmeralda? About 10 years ago, maybe? People started saying instead of search for it, they would just say Google it.
Maybe more than that.
More than 10 years? Because now it's just, I mean, that's what you say. You just say Google it. Does anybody use any other search engines? Is Ask Jeeves still around? Remember Ask Jeeves?
Oh, yeah.
What are some of the other ones? There's Bing.
Yeah, Yahoo.
Yahoo, people still use Yahoo, right?
Yeah, but it's the worst.
Why is Yahoo the worst?
Because you'll search something and everything doesn't come up. I don't know what it is about their Yahoo search, but it just doesn't. It's not as thorough as Google.
The results aren't as thorough as Google.
Yeah.
How is anybody use Bing?
I do use Bing.
And how does that work for you?
I would say it's probably not as good as Google, but it's probably number two. I agree with Esmeralda. I don't use Yahoo. I stopped using Yahoo because I couldn't deal with how bad it was.
Wow, really?
Yeah.
But a lot of people don't. A lot of people still have Yahoo email addresses.
I think, you know, it's kind of odd because Yahoo makes a ton of their money now on their fantasy football platform. It is the best fantasy football platform, and that's where a lot of their revenue is generated from now.
Wow!
And you have to have a Yahoo email address to use it.
Oh, I see.
So, but yeah, I also think it's the email you chose initially when you first created your email. You just naturally. You know, if you had a Yahoo one, it always defaults to the Yahoo main page at the end. You just type it in, you know.
You just keep it.
Yeah. Yeah.
I feel like Yahoo's the new AOL.
Well, I use AOL is my email account.
No, but like in the sense of when people. Yeah, but do you use it to search things and
no.
to find all your news and
no.
this and that?
No.
Yeah, like my dad. His thing was, I think it was the AOL because he was using an AOL account. So he would get that main page.
Right. Well, it's the main page. I have to go through the main page to get to check my email.
Right. But you're not using their services.
What do you mean?
Just like.
I'll say this. If I go to the main page and I see a news story that I'm interested in, I'll click on it. Like when they, because they have the slideshow thing when you go to the main page. As I'm going to check my email, the main page pops up. If something on that slideshow pops up, a headline or something that I think is interesting, I will click on it. But I don't. It's not my first go to. If I'm going to search for something, I go to Google.
Right. And like for example, there was that story earlier this week about how AOL is ending AIM, their AOL yeah. Instant Messenger. You know,
right.
Like that's an example of how just. When you had AOL, your instant messenger would pop up automatically.
Yeah, right.
And that's why a lot of people use it. Well, because so few people are using AOL now, they don't have AIM accounts, and
yeah.
There it goes.
Yeah, people laugh when I give them my email address. They laugh that it's because it's at AOL.com. I haven't changed it, man. It was the first account I ever had was with AOL, and I just kept it. I mean, I have a Gmail address. I never use it. But yeah, and I'm trying to remember if I have a Yahoo. I think I have a Yahoo email as well, but I don't use that. And the email address here, you know, through the radio station, that gets transferred to my AOL. So who, you know, whatever, if somebody sends me something at WGN Radio, it shows up in my AOL. So, but yeah. All right. Well, Google, that's a verb now. But here are some words that have changed their meanings over the years. Here's the explanation for it. When the English clergyman Thomas Fuller used the word unfriended in a letter back in 1659, we can be pretty sure that he wasn't talking about his Facebook page. So that word unfriended was used. Instead, Fuller used the word to mean something like estranged or fallen out. A straightforward literal meaning that has long since fallen out of language. It's to be expected that the words we use will change and develop over time as they begin to be used in original and innovative new contexts. But in some instances, these developments can lead to words gaining new meanings entirely from their original implications. And here are some of the words that have done that. All right, here's the word alienate. We all know what alienate means. It means that E.T. had something to eat. Well, yeah, come on now.
All right.
You get that, Dan? You get that because
he's an alien. I was laughing so hard I got out of view.
He's an alien, and he had some food. See, so he alienate. Alienate like alien is derived from the Latin word alienus, which was used to describe anything that was unfamiliar, unconnected, or foreign. But when alienate first appeared in English as a legal term in the mid-1400s, it meant to transfer ownership of some property over to someone else. So that is now foreign or unconnected to you. It's from here that the modern meaning of estrangement or distance eventually developed. So to alienate meant you signed over property to someone else. All right. It also means that E.T. had a burger. How about ambidextrous? Ambidextrous. Ambidextrous literally means able to use both hands as well as you use your right. Hold on a second. That, first of all, is a biased. That is a biased definition right there. Able to use both hands as well as you can use your right. No, I don't accept that. That's biased, Dan. Clearly, that definition was written by a right-handed person.
Wait till you get to the definition, because I was like, I know we've joked about it in the past, but it is more actual proof of your contentions.
That the world was not made for left-handed people.
Right.
All right. It literally means able to use both hands as well as you can use your right. It certainly isn't its earliest meaning, though. When it first began to be used in English in the mid-16th century, an ambidexter was someone who took took bribes from both sides in a legal action, and as such, ambidextrous originally meant duplicitous and two-faced. Come on, man! I'm tired of this.
Are you going to go sell your David Bowie album and storm
That's
off?
That's right. Going to go try and find David Bowie's genitalia and then sell my album. And change the rules to be for left-handed people. Wow. All right. It really has just been like in the history of the world, man. Left-handed people have been treated like dirt. Oh, it's evil. You're the devil. Oh, ambidextrous means that you're duplicitous. You're two-faced. You take bribes from both sides. Tired of this, man. Something needs to be done. And I'm the man to not do it. Oh, man. All right, we got to take a break. We have more words that don't mean what they used to. It's all coming up right here on 720 WGN. You want to jump in? 312-981-7200 for talk and text.
Superman never made any money. Superman.
Sometimes I despair the world will never see another man like him. Tarzan was king of the jungle and lord over all he
hates. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Wildcard Wednesday, man. Yeah, Wildcard Wednesday. Any song, anything? Any artist? 312-981-7200. Canadian Bill with Crash Test Dummies. That's Superman's song. He adds, Bill says that he never heard of the Canadian band we played yesterday. Okay. Crash Test Dummies actually sang songs with words in it. They didn't just go in every song. All right. How you doing, everybody? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We're talking about words that don't mean what they used to. And also that left-handed people are not treated correctly. And we're not going to take it anymore. All right, Esmeralda, the word bunny used to have a completely different meaning.
Okay.
Bunny derives from bun, which is an Old English word for a squirrel, not a rabbit.
Huh.
So a bunny should be squirrely. I wonder how bunny was associated with a rabbit, how that happened.
I call them bun buns.
Bun buns?
Yeah. And you see, because there's a bunch in my neighborhood. I'm like, oh, there goes a bun bun.
Little bun buns. Okay. I don't know if I've ever heard as a bunny or a rabbit referred to a bun bun.
But you have to say it in that voice. So,
what voice is that?
Oh, there goes a bun bun.
Oh, there goes a bun bun. That's how you have to say it?
You're close.
You have to sound like Gilbert Gottfried when you say it. And there's a bun bun. That's how you have to say it.
So they run away pretty much.
Hey, do you ever have a bun candy bar?
No.
Never had a bun?
Mm-mm. I'm
trying to remember what's in a bun. It's a candy bar. It's chocolate. I think it's like a big turtle. I mean, you know the turtle candies, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think the bun is like a big turtle. I'd have to look it up, but it's bun. I don't know if they're still around. Never had a bun, Esmeralda?
No.
Okay. But have you ever had a bun bun?
Yes, when I was little.
You did?
We had bunny rabbits.
Yeah. I've eaten bun buns.
Oh, I've never eaten.
Oh.
Wait, have I?
Have you ever?
I
you've
don't
never?
Know.
Yeah, come on.
I can't remember.
You've had to eat in a bun bun.
I guess. Maybe.
Dan, you ever eat a bun bun?
Can't say that I have.
Oh. Now, do you know the candy bun?
I have not had that either, no.
Okay. But have you ever heard of it?
I don't think so.
Am I hallucinating this? There was a candy bar called a bun. Can you look that up, Dan, to make sure that I'm not hallucinating?
Pearson's Bun Bar.
Yeah. And it's like a turtle, I think. I think
yes.
It's very much similar to a turtle, but
it
a big
like
a big turtle. So it's a bun.
How about that dummy from Friday that had like $175 worth of tasty cakes in it?
Tasty
car?
Cakes and honey buns.
Right.
Was he the winner, Esmeralda? Did we vote him on? No, I voted for him. You guys
voted. Yeah, they voted for the prison escapees that.
Yeah,
that
went into the escape
room.
Right. Exactly. all right, here's Jim on WGN. Hi, Jim.
Hey, first of all, the bun I totally remember from the Wayne Candy Company. There were two of them. One was kind of chocolate-covered and the other yellowish. And I think the main one was chocolate and the other one was maple.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right. Those used to be good. Yeah. I enjoyed those.
You can still see them some places, kind of like Lance Crackers if you find an old enough machine there.
Yeah.
They're in there. Hey, my word.
Yeah.
My word that isn't a word anymore. Actually, too. Fake news, is my, as far as I remember, totally changed with the 2016 election. Fake news, as I always understood it, was like advertorials or that computer thing where you sign on, and if you happen to be in Highland Park, it says, Tom Cruise found out this about Highland Park. It was all BS. And now fake news is somebody doesn't say what you like.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That's absolutely true. All right, Jim, thanks, man.
You sure you don't want something on the Zagnut or the Zero?
No, we're good. I think we're good on that. I'm fine with my Zagnut. I'm good on that. All right, Jim, take care, buddy. All right, we got to take a break. And the news is coming up next on 720 WGN. Hey, you know this song's from the 80s? Could you, could anybody tell that was from the 80s? Wild Card Wednesday. You ever hear Wild Card Wednesday? Yeah. I happen to love that song, by the way. That's Dan and Marengo. That's Felony with the Fanatic. Used to wonderful effect in the film Valley Girl with Nicolas Cage, one of Nicolas Cage's first movies. This is his breakout role. Still one of his best movies. That, of course, is you ever see Valley Girl, Dan?
No, I never did.
Okay. Esmeralda, you ever see Valley Girl?
I've seen parts of it.
It's a pretty great movie. Pretty great. And they play I'll Stop the World and Melt with You probably 642 times during the course of the movie. So. the great soundtrack, though. That's on the soundtrack. The Plimsolls, A Million Miles Away, is on the soundtrack. And, of course, Modern English with I'll Stop the World. So, okay, we're talking about words that don't mean the same thing that they used to. And we are also going to talk about some crazy, insane, real food that you were able to get at the fairs, at fairs across the country. And they're insane. It's insane food. And we're going to find out if anybody would eat it. Like, would Esmeralda eat that? We'll find out if that's going to. What that's going to happen a little bit later on. Okay, the word cheap doesn't mean what it used to mean, Esmeralda. The use of cheap to mean low cost is a relatively recent invention that dates back about 500 years. That might not sound all that recent, but compared to the fact that the earliest record of the word cheap in any context comes from the 9th century, when it originally meant something along the lines of simply trade or bargaining or marketplace. Likewise, to cheapen something originally meant to ask how much it costs. Oh. So I would like to cheap a banana for an apple. I will cheap you a banana for an apple. All right, how about dump? Nowadays, when you say you're down in the dumps, you mean that you're in a gloomy, low-spirited mood. But the original dump from this derives, it was actually an old Tudor English word for an absent-minded daydream or dazed, puzzled state of mind, not a depressive one. In that sense, it was probably at its roots in an old Dutch word, damp, meaning haze or mist. So a dump is like a little daydream. See, now that word, though, but the word dump now has some negative connotations, too. That, yeah. I like this one. This is a good one. Explode. The plode, P-L-O-D-E, the plode of explode is derived from the same root as applaud. It originally meant to jeer a performer off a stage. Oh, I like that one. Plode someone, get them off the stage. That's interesting. Explode. That's kind of, there's a derivation on that because to bomb on stage means that you've done terribly. I like those kind of terms, though, that they use, like, you know, for stage stuff and comedy and stand-up and stuff. Like, if you bomb, that means you've done terribly. But if you kill, that means you've done well. Yeah. So, it's a true story. Albert Brooks's father. And Bob Einstein's father. By the way, is anybody watching the new Curb Your Enthusiasm season?
No, I haven't watched
it. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. Two episodes in, I can't even explain to you how funny it is. The reason I bring it up, because Bob Einstein is Albert Brooks' brother. He's also Super Dave. And he also plays Funkhauser on he plays Funkhauser on Curb Your Enthusiasm. And he showed up on last week's episode of Curb Your Enthusiasm in a subplot that was fantastic. By the way, you guys have to watch this. This entire season, Larry's going to be dealing with a fatwa because he wrote a play called Fatwa, a musical comedy called Fatwa, about a guy who has a fatwa laid upon him by the Ayatollah. And a fatwa is a death notice. The word is out that anti-Muslim guy has got a fatwa on him. That means he's wanted for murder. He's going to be killed. So in real life, after Larry does this musical, goes on Jimmy Kimmel, makes fun of the Ayatollah, and then the real fatwa is given on the real Larry David. So Larry David spends a significant amount of the last two episodes in a disguise because he doesn't want anybody to recognize him. So he's wearing like these stupid glasses and a big stupid mustache and a wig. I can't describe it. It's hard for me to describe. But anyway, Funkhauser is in it. And to get back to this killing and stuff, when you kill on stage, that means you do well. When you bomb, you do poorly. Albert Brooks' father, and I've told this story on the air before, and we actually had the author Cliff Nesterov, who wrote the book called The Comedians, and he tells the story in there. This is a true story, Esmeralda. I think you've heard about it. There was a roast, a Friars Club roast, and Albert Brooks and Bob Einstein's father was a comedian, a Catskills comedian. He worked the Borscht Belt, old Jewish places in the Catskill Mountains. He worked that, and he became a very, very popular comedian. So he was on the dais, and he came up to speak about the person that they were roasting. And he got up on stage in his set where he roasted this guy that they were roasting, and he killed, absolutely killed. Every joke nailed it. Every joke hit. Huge laughs, applause, everything fantastic. His set ends. I mean, he was one of the best sets ever. The entire room murdered the entire room, killed the entire room, goes back to sit down on the dais, has a heart attack, dies. It's a true story. So the term that they use is that he killed and then he died. It's the term they use for that. And it's a crazy story, but it's absolutely true. It's an absolutely true story. So, all right, fantastic had a different meaning. The link between fantastic things and absolute fantasy was once much closer than it is today. Fantastic originally meant existing only in the imagination, or in other words, unreal or based on fantasy. Because fantastic things would be so extraordinary or bizarre, eventually the word became attached more loosely with weird, fanciful, and ultimately impressive or wonderful things. Yeah, fantastic is used in the same way as terrific, but it's also, I know the fantastic is also used in the way to describe fantasy, so I think it's got that. I still think it has that meaning. Let's see, how about fascinated? The root of fascinated is the Latin fascinus, which referred to a magic charm or spell. As such, it was originally meant to be bewitched or enchanted, not interested or enthralled. Okay. How about this? Girl. Esmeralda, you ready for this one?
Mm-hmm.
Bizarrely, the word girl was originally gender neutral and could be used in the same way that you would describe a child or a kid. Its meaning didn't begin to become more specific until the 15th century after the word boy, which originally meant male servant or assistant, was adopted into English and effectively stole half the meaning of girl, leaving us with the pair that we have today. That's interesting.
Huh.
Yeah. So girl was just like kid. Hey, girl. Hey, look at the girls. And it's boys and girls. Well, no, they wouldn't be, because boys and girls wouldn't have been, children. Okay. Handicap. Two trading parties would have their goods assessed by an impartial third person who would check the differences in value to ensure that both traded items are equally priced. If the traders agreed with his assessment, they would drop a small amount of cash into his unturned cap, which he would keep as part of the deal. If they disagreed, then the trade wouldn't take place, and he got nothing. It was the original notion of assessing the value of something that came to come up with the handicap races, which is stronger participants would deliberately impede to ensure a fair race in the mid-18th century. And then it became the general handicap of an impediment or hindrance. And one of the handicap races, too. So that's still the same thing. It's used in both ways. Yeah. Yeah, man. Okay. We got a few more words here, and then we're going to talk about food. And if you want to jump in, it's 312-981-7200 for Talk and Text. Wildcard Wednesday, too, right here on WGN. All right. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How are you? We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower. It's Wildcard Wednesday. Yeah, man, Wildcard Wednesday, yeah. 218 Erico Avlov with Really Bees. Okay. Whatever you say. You know, Dan, what we're going to do one of these nights, and that's not a reference to the Eagles, is we have to talk about, as we do every year, everybody's favorite candy for Halloween.
Yes.
Because I keep thinking of Zagnut, because our listener Jim, who called in earlier, said, you know, you know anything about Zagnut. There are two movies that have have a Zagnut in them, that where a Zagnut is prominently featured. Can you name them? Two movies that prominently feature a Zagnut. Have you ever had, by the way, have you ever had a Zagnut?
Can't say that I have.
They're good. Esmeralda, Zagnut?
No.
Okay, they still make them. They're out there somewhere. But two movies prominently feature the Zagnut. Esmeralda, can you name any of them?
Mm-mm.
Okay. One is 48 Hours, when Eddie Murphy is like, I want to get something to eat. I want to go to a nice restaurant. I want to have, you know, this is, Nick Nolte's been, he gets him out of prison and has been treating him like crap. And he's like, no, I'm hungry. We're going to go right now to a restaurant. And then Nick Nolte goes, all right, I'll get you dinner. And they walk down the hallway and they go to a candy machine. And he, out of the vending machine, gives him a Zagnut. There's your dinner. So that's Zagnut number one. Zagnut number two is in Beetlejuice. When he's trying, who is he trying to entice with the Zagnut? But it's like, you know, when Beetlejuice is he's on his little land there, the miniature, you know, graveyard and everything.
A fly?
It's a fly. Yeah, it's a fly. And he pulls the Zagnut out of the ground. Hey, come here. Hey, look at this. Hey. Then he pulls out, you see the giant Zagnut. It's Beetlejuice is in his shrink form, his small form, but the Zagnut is regular size, so he's got a giant Zagnut and it comes up out of the ground. He pulls it up out of the ground. Hey, look at this. Hey, here's a Zagnut. Those are the two movies that I think of every time I think of Zagnut. So I think if you Google Zagnut and Beetlejuice, that picture will pop up. Of the Zagnut coming out of the ground, I think. Is that what's coming up?
Yep.
Yeah. And then 48 Hours. If you Google 48 Hours, and it's the number four, the number eight, and HRS, and Zagnut, I'm sure the picture of Eddie Murphy or Nick Nolte holding the Zagnut in front of Eddie Murphy's face will pop up. But you can't do regular for the word hours because you'll get CBS. CBS will pop. You'll get a CBS news show expose on Zagnut that they did one night on 48 Hours. All right. Let's see. Here are some of the other words. Let's see. How about this? Livid. Describing someone as livid originally meant that it was a gray-blue color, like the color of slate. In that sense, it originally meant bruised or discolored. When it first became used in the English language in the 1600s, it wasn't until the 1920s that it came to mean furiously angry. In a sense, all of the color draining from someone's face. So originally it meant gray, blue, or bruised. I can't eat that apple. It's livid. How about nervous? Nervous originally meant sinewy or muscly, or by extension, powerful or vigorous. Wow, that's crazy how that changed. Back in the 15th century, a nervous person would be one with bulging muscles who appeared to be visibly strong. Before long, however, nervous came to refer to impulses and disorders that affected the nerves. Check out Arnold Schwarzenegger. He's nervous. He's really nervous. So weird. No one knows where the word punk comes from, but its earliest meaning in English was another name for a prostitute, the meaning of which appears in Shakespeare's Measure for Measure. Over the centuries, the word seemed to accrue a whole host of fairly unsavory connotations until it first began to be used of a petty criminal or a petty criminal's assistant sometime in the 1900s. Okay. And then it became used as an outcast. How about speechless? In Old English, speechless meant precisely that, permanently mute or physically unable to speak. Well, how has that changed? And then how is that? That's what it means. Okay. And then how about this? Thrill. To thrill originally meant to piece a hole in something. Your nostrils are your nose thrills. So it's a piece a hole in something. So instead of nostrils, Esmeralda, we have nose thrills.
That sounds exciting.
Yeah. I have a thrilling nose. It's filled with thrills. Shakespeare might have changed it. He implied that doing something thrilling has the ability to affect someone very deeply. Okay, queen. The word queen apparently started life as a general name for a woman or a wife before its meaning specialized to be the wife of a king in the middle of the Old English period. It has remained unchanged ever since. So it just meant woman, which, Esmeralda, I think you think is the actual definition of queen in the first place. Like every woman. That's what it means.
Well, there you go.
Every woman or wife was a queen back then. Now it's just that you have to be married to a king to be a queen. Or you have to be Freddie Mercury or Brian May. So, yeah. All right. Well, that's interesting. Words that don't mean what they used to. Yeah. We have the whole list and all of the combinations up on our Facebook page if you'd like to check it out. Hey, you know who hasn't made an appearance the whole show yet?
Look into my eyes. Gotcha.
There you go. Fartula.
Must have been pretty busy.
They were out here. Oh, wait.
What died in here?
Being both literary figures, I'm sure they were quite entertained.
They were fascinated by that. Yeah. Fascinated. They contacted both the ghost of Bram Stoker and Mary Shelley to find out just how fascinating it was. So there we go. All right, we got a break. We got the news coming up real quick.
Happy Halloween.
We'll have more Halloween-related topics as we get closer to Halloween and our spooktacular, our annual Halloween spooktacular, which is coming up a little bit later on. All right, we got to take a break. The news is coming up next.